Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Mother and Son Bring a Bit of Arizona Sunshine by Michael Bauer. Tucson, Arizona residents Marnell Martinez and her 19-year-old son, Colin Camp, hatched a plan to try and help out as many people as possible in Texas following last week's deadly storm. It was Thursday night, and Martinez, who works as a realtor, had just gotten home from work. Martinez and her son had both been bothered by the news of people struggling in the Lone Star State, but they soon came up with the idea to go and help out. "We've always had this funny fascination with Texas," Martinez said. "We always joke that we can mesh well with Texans." I said, "Well, we could raise as much money as we can and buy as much as we can and then drive down there on Sunday." Soon enough, the mother-son duo found themselves in Odessa, delivering supplies needed for home repairs to elderly, low-income people affected by last week's storm. As Martinez and Camp heard of the needs and ongoing relief efforts in Texas, they started to call the nonprofits in larger cities such as Austin and Dallas. "They told us that the larger towns were going to get the most resources and that it was all right if we wanted to go to smaller towns since they need it," Martinez said. So they looked at the map, and after making calculations, Odessa and Midland came up as the destination. Martinez reached out to the Odessa Chamber of Commerce late Friday afternoon to share the story and was asked what was needed for the area. "We didn't want to go too far in case there was another freeze," Camp said. "We looked around. We asked the Chamber of Commerce who they would suggest and know who will put all the money and supplies and give it to the people who would need it. The rest was just packing and driving." The Odessa Chamber of Commerce was able to connect Martinez and Camp with the executive director of the Odessa Christmas in Action, Barbara Nunez, so that they could help with home repairs and supply distribution. Christmas in Action is a nonprofit agency that, in partnership with the community, repairs homes of low-income, elderly, and/or disabled homeowners. Over the weekend, Camp and Martinez began collecting cash, donations, and supplies. They have raised approximately $5,000. By Sunday, they had loaded up a U-Haul full of items and began the trip to West Texas. "It was amazing," Martinez said. "It all came together by the end of the day on Friday. I got up at 3 a.m. Saturday morning and worked until 10 p.m. to shop all day long. We loaded everything. Sunday morning, we realized that we had raised even more money. We had spent a lot at Home Depot, so we started spending more at the Ace Hardware in Wilcox, Arizona, and they just loaded us up." Camp said there weren't many goals that he and his mother had set before coming out to Odessa, other than to do as much as they could. "When we were driving here, we saw that we had gained more money, and we stopped at other places to load up the truck and kept going," Camp said. Camp currently works in handyman services in Tucson. "At 14 years old, I started working in tile and made good money for a 14-year-old kid," Camp said. A few years later, Camp started working for a home and remodeling company before noticing that he was having back pains. After going to the doctor, he learned that he had scoliosis. "I decided to make a career change with a lighter path," Camp said. Camp is not a plumber, but he says the work that he's done in handyman services helped him to know what kind of supplies to buy over the weekend. "It certainly helped me out with what to get, like sealant and things to fix copper pipes and all that stuff," Camp said. Martinez and Camp have been helping Christmas in Action clients to rebuild and repair. "What's really needed here is plumbers," Martinez said. "Basically, any maintenance or handyman or anyone who knows anything about plumbing. We brought the supplies, but what they really need are the plumbers who can do the work for the elderly and low-income people." Nunez has been thankful for the help from Martinez and Camp. "It's amazing," Nunez said. "We need help." Nunez, who's been here for 14 years, says she has never seen this amount of devastation of pipes, roofs, and windows. "Our community was devastated by this ice and snowstorm," Nunez said. "It's not just the people that we serve, it's the entire community. We have to have materials. So the cool thing is that we're able to help them get food, plumbing materials, and we're able to help them get the things that are needed to be fixed so they can go on with their lives. Martinez and Camp arrived in Odessa on Monday and spent all Tuesday delivering the food and supplies to those that needed it. "We have a list of the homes that need the supplies," Martinez said. "We're hoping that from the media attention that plumbers can help step up and contact Barbara, and she'll connect them with the people that need it. The goal is to have the house ready to go." Camp says the past few days have been awesome and that it's been a good feeling to help out as many people as possible before they leave back for Arizona on Wednesday. "It feels great," Camp said. "It's great how nice everyone here has been to us. I'm very happy to be able to help out." Martinez echoed those thoughts. "I just think it's been an awesome experience to help out my son," Martinez said. "I'm so impressed with him and so proud. It's been really heartwarming to see the community. Also, there's so much anger and negativity in the world. For him to see how many people will step up in our community is great." 389 days since the city has fought a lawsuit brought by the Odessa American to enforce the state law that guarantees the public's right to see basic police records. Through January 6th, the city has spent $112,138.47 of taxpayers' dollars to fight releasing information on crime in Odessa. COVID-19 news by the numbers. Ector County numbers are not updated daily. ECISD daily cases, 2 students, 1 staff. U.S. cases, 27,993,504 total confirmed and 498,993 deaths. Find out more at dshs.state.tx.us. COVID-19 vaccines. Medical Center Hospital will be administering the first dose of Pfizer COVID-19 vaccine at the drive-through clinic at Ratliff Stadium, South Main Entrance. The clinics have been scheduled from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. today, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Thursday and Sunday. The clinic is now open for 1C community members, those who are at risk, ages 65 and older, and other essential workers, people who work in transportation and logistics, food service, housing, construction, and finance, information technology, communications, energy, law, media, public safety, and public health. Online registration requested for quicker on-site processing. For those that are not able to register online, will be rerouted to a waiting area to register before vaccination. Wear short-sleeved clothing, easy to access arm. Bring a valid driver's license or other photo ID. To pre-register or for more information, visit mchodessa.com. For those looking for a way to help, email volunteers at odessa-tx.gov. For anyone who can't make the first shot drive-through, those shots will be given through Odessa Regional Medical Center. MCH will be administering booster second doses shots of the Pfizer vaccines. A booster shot drive-through clinic will take place from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. March 2nd through the 5th at Ratliff Stadium. This drive-through is only for the remaining people who got their first shot at Ratliff. Pre-registration is not required. Bring your vaccination and ID card. For anyone who can't make the booster clinic and or anyone getting the first shot, including first shot drive-through, those shots will be given through Odessa Regional Medical Center. Odessa Regional Medical Center, 520 East 6th Street, is expecting COVID-19 vaccines soon. The vaccine is free of charge while supplies last. Please check on vaccine availability. For more information, call 432-582-8549. Walgreens has limited COVID-19 vaccines available in select areas. HEB pharmacies are administering the COVID-19 vaccine based on state and federal eligibility guidelines in select areas. To sign up, updates, or information, visit vaccine.heb.com. The CVS stores are administering the COVID-19 vaccine by appointment only in select stores, based on local eligibility guidelines. For updates or information, visit cvs.com, CVS Pharmacy app, or call 800-746-7287. Walmart and Sam's Club pharmacies are administering the COVID-19 vaccine based on state and federal eligibility guidelines in select areas. Local news roundup. Jazz and civil rights. Midland County Public Libraries, 301 West Missouri Avenue, Midland, has scheduled jazz and the civil rights movement at 3 p.m. today. Renowned flutist and lecturer Galen Abdur-Razak for a history lesson infused with musical performance. To join Zoom meeting, visit bit.ly/3AM(T)P9. Passcode 444434. Celebrating Black History Month. The Ellen Newell Art Museum, 4909 East University Boulevard, is celebrating Black History Month by featuring a short video on African American artists, followed by a community discussion in partnership with UTPB from 6:30 p.m. to 8 p.m. each Thursday. Featured artists will be Faith Ringgold, Betty Saar, Kehinde Wiley, and Kara Walker. For more information, call 550-9696 or visit www.newellartmuseum.org. Concert. The Midland Odessa Symphony and Chorale has scheduled Marvelous Melodies, a virtual family concert at 7 p.m. Thursday on Basin PBS. Visit www.mosc.org or www.basinpbs.org. Joyful Sound Choir. First Baptist Church, 2104 West Louisiana Avenue, Midland, has scheduled a Joyful Sound Choir from 10:30 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. Thursdays through May 27th at the church choir room. All singers from the community age 55 plus are invited to join. For more information, call James Irvin at 432-683-0600. Free COVID-19 testing for students. Harmony Public School, 2755 North Grandview Avenue, is having free drive-through testing for students, virtual or in-person, for COVID-19. To sign the consent form and pre-register, visit https://register.txrapidtest.org. Call school to make an appointment at 432-363-6000. For guidelines or more information, visit www.facebook.com/HSA Odessa. Man charged with sexually assaulting 14-year-old girl. A 19-year-old man was arrested after he reportedly admitted to sexually assaulting a 14-year-old girl. Christopher Reinhardt was charged with sexual assault of a minor, a second-degree felony. The reported sexual assault happened around 4:30 a.m. February 20th in the 1400 block of East 18th Street. The complainant, identified as the father of the 14-year-old girl, reportedly told police that he had gotten home and saw Reinhardt hiding in his daughter's closet. Reinhardt stated he had arrived at the 14-year-old girl's residence and entered the east side window of her bedroom. Reinhardt was read his Miranda warning, which he waived. Reinhardt stated he had been lying in the bed with the 14-year-old when they had sexual intercourse. Reinhardt also reportedly told police that condoms were used during sexual intercourse and condoms were located inside the 14-year-old's bedroom. Reinhardt was arrested, charged, and transported to the Ector County Law Enforcement Center. He had one bond totaling $50,000 and posted bail on February 21st, jail records show. Police searching for a man connected to multiple indecent assaults. The Odessa Police Department is looking for a man involved in multiple indecent assaults. The assaults have happened throughout Odessa and are believed to have been committed by the same man. OPD has released a photo of the man that can be seen at tinyurl.com/RH-H39KHD. Anyone with information about the man is asked to contact Detective Jay Gonzalez at 432-335-4969 or Odessa Crime Stoppers at 432-333-TIPS. Police searching for two men connected to auto burglary and credit card abuse. The Odessa Police Department is looking for two men reportedly involved in an auto burglary and use of stolen credits. The reported auto burglary and credit card abuse happened December 27th in the 4600 block of Oakwood Drive. OPD has released photos of the men that can be seen at tinyurl.com/XM-FRKJ5Y. Anyone with information is asked to contact Detective Jay Campbell at 432-335-3328 or Odessa Crime Stoppers at 432-333-TIPS and reference case number 20-0022-343. Texas Shakespeare Festival Roadshow to film at Globe Theater. Odessa Arts, Odessa College, Basin PBS, and the Texas Shakespeare Festival have partnered to film two Shakespeare plays, Hamlet and Much Ado About Nothing, at the Globe Theater at Odessa College. These filmed performances will be broadcast on Basin PBS in honor of Shakespeare's birthday, April 23rd. When the COVID pandemic hit, live performances were shut down immediately. One of the first cancellations was the 2020 Odessa Shakespeare Festival, scheduled for November 2020, Odessa Arts Executive Director Randy Hamm said in a news release. "We knew this was going to mean disappointing a lot of students, so we immediately started working on a scenario where we could do something." Odessa Arts and the Texas Shakespeare Festival had been working together for the past 5 years building an audience. Matthew Simpson, Associate Artistic Director of TSF, began crafting a plan to cast and rehearse the productions in TSF's home in Kilgore. The cast would rehearse for 3 weeks, observing strict quarantine rules, maintaining social distancing, wearing masks, and sanitizing. The cast was tested once a week while in Kilgore. The cast and crew arrived in Odessa on February 21st, and were immediately tested one more time. After 2 days of rehearsal in the space, Overton Films arrived to capture the performances on film. The shooting schedule will keep the cast and crew in Odessa through February 26th. Upon completion, Overton Films will edit the footage, which will then be broadcast on Basin PBS. In addition, digital copies of the film will be made available for classroom use to any school that requests them. Death notices. Joan Cox, 85, of Midland, died Monday, February 22nd in Midland. Celebration of life is scheduled for 10 a.m. February 27th at Nellie Picklin Welch Funeral Home Chapel in Midland. The family will receive guests from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Friday, February 26th at Nellie Picklin Welch Funeral Home in Midland. Francisco Caquito Manriquez, Jr., 59, of Odessa, died Sunday, February 21st, in Lubbock. Mass will be celebrated at 12 noon on Friday, February 26th, at Santa Teresa de Jesus Catholic Church in Presidio. Burial will follow at Desert Hills. Rosary will be held at 7 p.m. on Thursday, February 25th, at Willowbrook Funeral Home. Father Mike is officiating. Francisca Chita Montia Gonzalez, 80, of Odessa, died Wednesday, February 17th, in Odessa. Celebration of life is scheduled for 11 a.m. Wednesday, February 24th, at Hope Alive Church. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Resurrection section. Hermano Mario Martinez is officiating. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Charles Scott Watkins, 46, of Odessa, died Sunday, February 7th, in Odessa. Memorial service is scheduled for Saturday, March 6th, at North Crest Baptist Church, Northwest 5th Street in Andrews, at 2 p.m. Jerry Bailey is officiating. Arrangements are by La Paz Perches Funeral Homes of Odessa.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Wednesday, February 24th, 2021. This is the oil page. This article is entitled, "Oil Wavers with Supply-Driven Rally Flashing Warning Signs." by Andres Guerra-Luz and Alex Longley, Bloomberg. Oil dipped in New York as technical indicators signal prices are due for a pullback following a strong rally this month. The market is pricing in a strong short-term deficit, according to oil trader Vital Group. But uncertainty remains over when demand will come back in force, and U.S. production is resuming in Texas after the cold snap. Crude is still lingering in overbought territory after an 18% jump so far this month. West Texas Intermediate for April edged 3 cents lower to settle at $61.67 a barrel. After a $2 rally yesterday, it was hard to sustain further gains, said Peter McNally, global head for industrials, materials, and energy at Third Bridge. Still, if the combination of seasonal demand, vaccine rollouts, and ongoing supply constraints all conspire, it looks like inventories will continue to decline. Bank of America joined others in boosting its Brent price outlook for 2021, expecting a ceiling price of $70 a barrel amid tightening supplies. Money is flooding into the space, with the aggregate open interest on Brent futures hitting a fresh new record. Meanwhile, Saudi Arabia and Russia will once again head into an OPEC Plus meeting with differing opinions about adding more crude to the market, potentially pressuring the recent rally. Riyadh is calling for caution, while Moscow appears to favor a supply hike. The group will meet March 4th to discuss whether to provide more crude to the market in April. It is unmistakable that we'll see some increase. But how much we get is still uncertain, said Bill O'Grady, Executive Vice President at Confluence Investment Management in St. Louis. The Saudis like this price level a lot because it's high enough where they generate good levels of income, but low enough to where they don't anticipate a huge pickup in U.S. production. U.S. crude inventories likely fell last week amid the polar blast, according to a Bloomberg survey. The industry-funded American Petroleum Institute will report its figures later Tuesday ahead of U.S. government data on Wednesday. However, crude production from the Texas portion of the Permian Basin has rebounded significantly to around 2.9 million barrels a day from just 600,000 to 700,000 exactly a week ago, according to Bert Gilbert, head of North American Business Development at oil data analytics startup OilX. Typically, the area produces roughly 3.5 million barrels a day. This recovery is largely due to a return of electricity to the region, Gilbert said. Other energy infrastructure impacted by the U.S. deep freeze is also in the process of restarting. Plains All-American Pipeline, LP, plans to restore normal operations at 16 oil pipelines after notifying users last week of a force majeure, according to a person familiar with the matter, while at least 8 refineries in Texas were trying to restart as of early Tuesday with varying degrees of success. This article is entitled, Interior Nominee Haaland Faces Heated Questioning at Hearing, by Jennifer A. DeLuey, Bloomberg. Interior Secretary-designate Deb Haaland downplayed her past opposition to hydraulic fracturing during a heated confirmation hearing Tuesday as she sought to reassure senators worried she would clamp down on fossil fuel development. A clean energy transition is not going to happen overnight, and the U.S. will continue to rely on fossil fuels even as the country advances technology and innovation, Haaland told the Senate Energy and Natural Resources Committee vetting her nomination. There is no question that fossil energy does and will continue to play a major role in America for years to come. And the activity helps fund critical services, Haaland said. The federal government also should continue permitting oil wells, pipelines, and coal mines, Haaland said. The energy is here to provide for us, she said. Haaland's assurances appeared to provide little comfort to Senate Republicans who argued that the Democratic lawmakers' criticism of hydraulic fracturing, support for pipeline protesters, and endorsement of the Green New Deal make her unfit for a job that includes overseeing energy development on federal land. Yet the first portion of Haaland's hearing,
set to be continued Wednesday morning, failed to provide any new ammunition to critics that could derail her expected Senate confirmation. And key Democrats from energy-rich states, whose votes could be key in the narrowly divided Senate, largely avoided grilling Haaland as they peppered her with questions about conservation and easement permitting. Even Senator Joe Manchin, the chairman of the energy panel who hails from coal flush West Virginia, took pains to emphasize that President Joe Biden should have wide deference in selecting his top deputies. A president should be given wide latitude in the selection of his cabinet, Manchin said. Manchin, who has already vowed to vote against confirming Neera Tanden to be budget director, emphasized the broad scope of the Interior Secretary's role as the guardian of the nation's public lands and its energy production. Lands and waters managed by the Interior Department produce nearly 20% of the nation's energy that is critical for our energy independence, Manchin said, including 12% of its natural gas, 24% of its oil, and 43% of its coal. Manchin has asked tough questions about Haaland's commitment to energy development and her approach to the reclamation of abandoned coal mines, but quickly moved on to other subjects. Senator John Barrasso of Wyoming, the Energy Committee's top Republican, said he believed Haaland's positions are squarely at odds with the mission of the Department of Interior, including managing the nation's oil, gas, and coal resources in a responsible manner, not eliminating access to them. If Representative Haaland intends to use the Department of Interior to crush the economy of Wyoming and other Western states, then I'm going to oppose the nomination, Barrasso warned. Senator John Hoeven, a Republican from North Dakota, unsuccessfully pressed Haaland to recuse herself from any Interior Department decisions over the Dakota Access Pipeline. Given the nominee's support of Standing Rock Sioux protesters camped along its route in 2016. Haaland said she would lean on the Council of Interior Department lawyers on the matter, while stressing that her actions were meant to support Indigenous people who felt inadequately consulted over the Energy Transfer LP project. Senator Steve Daines, a Montana Republican, said he still had concerns about confirming Haaland after asking her to account for past statements about hydraulic fracturing, wildlife protection, and energy jobs, with select quotes highlighted on posters propped up behind him. The track record and the ideology in the past, I think, will perpetuate more divisiveness, Daines said. And Republican Senator Lisa Murkowski, who sharply questioned the Biden administration's approach to energy development in her home state of Alaska, said after the hearing she was still undecided on the pick. Haaland repeatedly emphasized that Biden's policy views would take preference. If I'm confirmed as secretary, it is President Biden's agenda, not my own agenda, that I would be moving forward, Haaland said. Haaland, who is a member of the Laguna Pueblo tribe west of Albuquerque, New Mexico, would become the first Native American cabinet secretary. Biden nominated Haaland after a months-long campaign by Native Americans and environmental activists who have said she would reset the Interior Department's relationship with tribal nations and would bring a fresh perspective to the agency, most frequently led by white, male Western politicians. Haaland, 60, was just re-elected to her second term as a Democrat representing New Mexico in the U.S. House of Representatives. This article is entitled, Oxy Trims Losses in Final Quarter of a Brutal Year, by Paul Takahashi, Houston Chronicle. Houston independent producer Occidental Petroleum trimmed losses in the fourth quarter, helped by crude prices that rose as coronavirus vaccines were rolled out. Oxy lost $1.3 billion during the final 3 months of 2020, down from nearly $3.8 billion in the third quarter and $8.4 billion in the second quarter after the pandemic broke out nationally. Fourth quarter revenue rose to $3.3 billion, compared with third quarter revenue of about $3.3 billion and second quarter revenue of about $3 billion. In the fourth quarter, our businesses again outperformed as our teams continued to leverage our technical expertise to mitigate production decline while relentlessly lowering costs, CEO Vicky Haloub said in a statement. The pandemic and oil bust struck a blow to Oxy, which took on $38 billion of debt to acquire rival Anadarko 6 months before the coronavirus and an oil price war sank crude prices last spring. For the year, Oxy lost $15.7 billion, compared with a 2019 loss of $985 million. Annual revenue fell to $16.3 billion from $21.8 billion. The acquisition of Anadarko made Occidental one of the largest players in the Permian Basin, but it was a costly bet that oil prices would rise and that the company could sell some of Anadarko's assets to pay debt from the transaction. In response to the oil bust, Oxy slashed spending, laid off workers, and cut its dividend for the first time in 3 decades. Sales of more than $2 billion in assets last year, helping repay $2.3 billion of debt in the fourth quarter. The company sold non-core assets in the Texas Permian for $820 million, 1 million acres in Wyoming, Colorado, and Utah to Orion Mine Finance for $1.3 billion, and assets in Colombia to private equity firm The Carlyle Group for $825 million. Oxy said it plans to allocate $2.9 billion toward its capital budget to sustain its oil and gas production at fourth quarter 2020 levels through the end of this year. The company also said it raised $2 billion in senior unsecured debt and extended the due date for about $2 billion of its near-term debt. This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram. Tuesday, February 23rd, 2020. This article is entitled "A Giant Flaw in Texas Blackouts. It Cut Power to Gas Supplies" by Rachel Adams Hurd, Javier Bloss, and Mark Chediak, Bloomberg. When the Texas power grid was on the brink of collapse and its operator plunged thousands into darkness, it didn't make an exception for the oil and gas field. Power was, unsurprisingly, diverted to hospitals and nursing homes. ERCOT, as the grid manager is known, was staving off utter catastrophe, its chief executive later said. But leaving shale fields like the Permian Basin dark had an unintended consequence. Producers who depend on electricity to power their operations were left with no way to pump natural gas. And that gas was needed more than ever to generate electricity. As one executive described, it was like a death spiral. The result was a vicious cycle that serves as a painful lesson to any power grid operator and utility company dealing with rolling outages during extreme weather. Several energy companies say that while frozen infrastructure and equipment malfunctions caused gas volumes to plummet, a lack of power also had a profound impact on supply. It's a phenomenon that highlights just how interconnected and interdependent Texas's energy network is. In the Permian, most drillers target more valuable crude, with gas typically considered an unwanted byproduct. That wasn't the case over days of forced power outages, as nearly every source of fuel faltered in the unprecedented cold that slammed Texas. Even with its explorers focusing on crude, the state is the country's biggest gas producer, and the fuel makes up just over half of the sources of its power generation mix. A crucial part of the natural gas system was knocked out by the power outages, compressor stations that help keep gas flowing through pipelines. As ERCOT started asking utilities to prompt big customers to reduce consumption Sunday evening, those stations went down, and the pressure across multiple gas pipelines started to drop, ultimately tripping some utilities offline because of lack of fuel.
That, in turn, led some areas of the Eagle Ford Shale and the Permian to simply turn off gas production completely. The situation got worse in the early hours of Monday as demand continued to climb. ERCOT simply didn't have the power, and millions of homes fell into darkness. ERCOT executives have said the utilities ultimately determine which circuits to turn off during a rotation outage. The grid operator didn't have information on power being cut to gas compressor stations, a spokesman said in an email. At its peak, nearly 40% of U.S. oil output was shuttered due to the extreme cold and associated blackouts. Three-quarters of the U.S. frack fleet was lost this week, leaving 41 crews working to blast water, sand, and chemicals underground to release trapped oil and gas, Matt Johnson, chief executive officer at Primary Vision, Inc., said Friday. Already, companies including Marathon Oil Corporation and Devon Energy Corporation have begun using restored power from local grids or generators to restart output, according to people familiar with the matter. It's not yet clear how long it will take to restore all the lost oil and gas supply, but oil traders and executives have said they hope most of the production lost will return within days as temperatures rise and power becomes available. This article is entitled, "Saudi's Russia Differ Again on Oil Strategy Before OPEC Plus Meeting," by Grant Smith, Salma El-Wardani, and Javier Blas, Bloomberg. Saudi Arabia and Russia are once again heading into an OPEC Plus meeting on opposite sides of a crucial debate about the oil market. Riyadh is publicly urging fellow members to be extremely cautious despite prices rebounding to a one-year high. In private, the kingdom has signaled it would prefer that the group broadly holds output steady, delegates said. Moscow, on the other hand, is indicating that it still wants to proceed with a supply increase. The positions mirror those taken at recent meetings, but this time the Saudis have a new bargaining chip. 1 million barrels a day of voluntary cuts. The kingdom pledged to make these extra curbs only in February and March, but some see signs that could change as the negotiations get underway. The key question for me is how they return the Saudi barrels, said Bill Farron-Price, a director of research at research firm Enverus and veteran observer of the cartel. The kingdom could potentially use them as leverage for getting a deal, he said. 10 months after slashing crude production, when COVID-19 crushed global demand, the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries and its allies are still withholding 7 million barrels a day from the market, about 7% of global supply. It's been a sacrifice, with members such as Iraq and Nigeria struggling economically as exports dropped. But it has yielded results, reviving prices to above $65 a barrel in London and shoring up producers' battered revenues. By most estimates, the cuts have meant oil demand exceeded production this year by a wide margin. The supply gap grew even wider last week as freezing weather in Texas caused a slump in U.S. output. When OPEC Plus gathers on March 4th, it will discuss whether to provide more crude to the market in April. There will be two crucial decisions. First, the group as a whole must choose whether to restore as much as 500,000 barrels a day, the next step in a gradual revival of production that was agreed on in December but paused at the January meeting. Second, Saudi Arabia must determine the fate of the extra 1 million barrels a day of extra voluntary cuts it is making this month and next to help clear surplus inventories even more quickly. The kingdom initially announced this reduction would be reversed in April, but their latest thinking is fluid, and the next move hasn't been finalized, delegates said. Offering to maintain some part of this voluntary cut in April could give Riyadh a useful bargaining chip if it's seeking to limit the group's overall output increase. Some easing in production restraint is likely at the March meeting, said Bob McNally, president of consultant Rapidan Energy Group and a former White House official. The real bargaining has yet to start, and no decision has been pre-baked.
Having differed over the pace of supply increases at the last two ministerial meetings, public comments from Riyadh and Moscow indicate that another debate looms. Russian Deputy Prime Minister Alexander Novak said on Friday, on February 14th, that the market is balanced. While he hadn't publicly expressed a policy preference for the March 4th discussions, Novak argued at the last two OPEC Plus meetings for production increases. Novak's Saudi counterpart also appears to be sticking to a familiar position. Acknowledging his stance might be unpopular, Saudi Energy Minister Prince Abdulaziz bin Salman warned his fellow producers against complacency. The group must recall the scars of last year's crisis and be extremely cautious in its next move, he said. The football match is still being played, and it's too early to declare any victory against the virus, the prince said. The referee is yet to blow the final whistle.
Hello, this is Michael reading the inside stories of the Odessa American for Monday, February 22nd. Kids Art Contest. The Take Care of Texas Kids Art Contest runs through March 5th, 2021. K through 5 students in Texas are invited to enter their artwork. 6 students and 1 lucky teacher will win a tablet or laptop. Prizes are made possible through a donation from the Texas Chemical Council. To sign up or for more details, visit takecareoftexas.org/kids/K-5-art contest.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Sunday, February 21st, 2021. Other voices. It's personal when something happens to our community. By State Representative Brooks Landgraf. Aside from walking down the aisle with my bride and witnessing the birth of our daughter, the moment I was first elected to serve as your state representative back in 2014 was the proudest moment of my life. I hope you realize how honored I feel to have your vote of confidence and how seriously I take my duty to represent your voice in the halls of the Texas Capitol building. When something happens to my family, my West Texas family, I take it personally. When state transportation funding is laser-focused on communities along the I-35 corridor to the detriment of our roads and bridges, I fight tooth and nail to ensure the Permian Basin gets its fair share of funding. And I'm thankful to say we are now in the middle of a highway construction renaissance in the Permian Basin, with more funding allocated over the next few years than any other time in our history. When an active shooter terrorized our community, I fell to my knees, praying for God's strength and mercy. I went to see the pain on the faces of the victims, to listen to them, and to hear the hurt in their voices. That's why I filed House Bill 103 to create an active shooter alert system to save the lives of as many Texans as possible the next time there is a shooting rampage. When COVID-19 started taking jobs and lives out in the oil patch at a disproportionate rate compared to the rest of the state, I was as angry as I was sad. So I advocated for business owners to have more flexibility to stay open, directed my staff to help field unemployment claims, and worked with state and local leaders to turn Odessa into the largest COVID-19 vaccination hub in West Texas. When the federal government started taking an inch on their way to taking a mile, I felt as though the livelihoods of my friends and family were being threatened. So I filed House Bill 1683 to stop any federal overreach on oil and gas regulations in Texas. And now, when millions of Texans are shivering in their own homes because of a bloated, inefficient state agency and power companies who refuse to be transparent or be held accountable, you better believe I take that personally. Now, it isn't just a fight for West Texans. This is a fight for all Texans against state agencies that have failed to fulfill basic functions. I'm thankful for and personally know many of the frontline workers working in hazardous conditions to get the grid working, and I'm grateful to those assisting vulnerable Texans during this time of dire need. But the leaders at the Electric Reliability Council of Texas, ERCOT, and Public Utility Commission, PUC, have dropped the ball. My colleagues and I in the Texas House are going to hold their feet to the fire. Changes and reforms are clearly needed, and I'm going to work until we have them. It is an honor to serve and fight for you in the Texas House. It has been one hell of a 22-month stretch, but I wholeheartedly believe that God is already on the other side of this struggle. Until we get to that other side, with God's grace, I'll be fighting for you, fighting to make Texas and the Permian Basin the greatest place in which to work, live, and raise a family. God bless Texas. Brooks Landgraf. Landgraf serves House District 81, which encompasses Andrews, Ector, Ward, and Winkler counties. High Electricity Demand Highlights Need, by Lou Nelson, Senior Policy Associate, Center for Rural Affairs. Earlier this week, extreme weather caused power outages for much of the central United States. Bitter cold led to increased demand for electricity, while also forcing significant portions of electric generation offline, leaving millions of people across the Midwest, Great Plains, and Texas, in particular, without electricity. Although many were quick to point to wind energy as the main cause, numerous sources of generation were impacted by the abnormally cold weather. According to the Electric Reliability Council of Texas, about 16 gigawatts, GW, of renewable energy, mostly composed of wind, was taken offline due to freezing conditions. Meanwhile, nearly 30 gigawatts of thermal generation, including coal, gas, and nuclear, went offline because of fuel shortage, frozen pipelines, or faulty equipment. This crisis has highlighted the necessity of a diverse mix of electric generation and a robust electric transmission grid to meet demand across the nation. Geographic diversity matters too. States that join regional power pools are often better equipped to manage local disruptions. Investments in electric storage and demand management can help provide additional diverse resources to meet our electric needs. There must also be strategic efforts to update and expand the electric grid to address the challenge of extreme weather and a shift in the way electricity is generated and consumed. Meeting these challenges stands to not only limit the possibility of revisiting the events of this week, but also create new economic opportunities for rural America and the country as a whole. Established in 1973, the Center for Rural Affairs is a private, nonprofit organization working to strengthen small businesses, family farms and ranches, and rural communities through action-oriented programs addressing social, economic, and environmental issues.
Should I risk taking the shingles shot to your good health for Wednesday? Dear Dr. Roach, I have some severe allergies to medicines and an allergy to eggs. Should I risk taking the shingles shot? Dr. Roach writes, the flu vaccine is usually made with egg-based culture, but since it is so highly purified, it is still safe for people with egg allergies. The shingles, pneumonia, and available COVID-19 vaccines do not use eggs and are safe. I'm not sure what you mean by severe allergies. The vast majority of people with drug allergies will be able to take all the available vaccines without problem. It is certainly appropriate to discuss any vaccine with your doctor. The COVID-19 vaccines, in particular, have had some episodes of allergic reactions in people with a history of anaphylaxis, and extra caution is warranted. The shingles vaccine series of two shots is a highly effective treatment to prevent getting shingles. Readers may write Dr. Keith Roach at P.O. Box 536475, Orlando, Florida, 32853-6475.
Hello, this is Michael reading Dear Abby for Wednesday, February 24th, 2021. Punishment doesn't fit crime after boy is caught. Dear Abby, when I stopped by my brother's house a couple of weeks ago, he mentioned that his 9-year-old son was grounded in his bedroom. He was being punished for snooping in his dad's vintage collection of porn. At first, I was upset with my brother and his wife because it was their fault that the boy had access to it, and boys are naturally curious. But when I found out what his punishment was, I became enraged. Their brilliant idea was to make my nephew disgusted with porn by forcing him to look at the entire collection for 3 hours instead of playing outside. Maybe this tactic works for cigarette smoking or chewing tobacco, but this seemed very wrong. I was so appalled, I overstepped. I went straight into my nephew's room and told him he was allowed to go outside and play. Abby, what do you think? Am I being ridiculous? What should I have done? Appalled in Ohio. Dear Appalled, the child's punishment was extreme and inappropriate. What you should have done was point out to your brother and sister-in-law that their punishment may have been counterproductive. Rather than working as aversion therapy, it could result in whetting their son's appetite for more. You might also have suggested they consult a child psychologist for suggestions on how to deal with their son's budding sexual curiosity, which is entirely normal, and urged that from now on, they keep their collection under lock and key. Dear Abby, I recently met a very nice woman online. During our first phone call, she told me about an injury she received a few months ago that has left her with a disability. I'm not bothered by it, and I'd like to get to know her better. From the way she responded to a few things, I got the impression that she is still coming to terms with what has happened, as anyone would be. I have no experience with a situation like this, and I have no idea if, from the perspective of dating, it is the right thing to engage someone who is going through this. Any thoughts? Tentative in Indiana. Dear Tentative, yes, it's the right thing, but only if you can be supportive and patient during what has to be an extremely emotional, disruptive time in this woman's life. I am sure she could use a supportive male friend right now, as long as you two can continue to have an open and honest dialogue with each other. Dear Abby, my 30-year-old son lives with me for financial reasons, and I love him dearly. He helps with bills and works a full-time job. My only problem with him is he wears the same pair of pants for weeks without washing them and hasn't washed his sheets in months. I didn't raise him that way. He does take a shower every night. He only owns one pair of pants, and I can't get him to buy another pair. I have complained to him several times about the bad smell. How can I get him to change his ways? Fed up mother in Texas. Dear Fed up, at this point in his life, that may not be possible. It seems strange to me that someone who smells bad could hold a full-time job, but I will take your word for it. The easiest solution to your problem might be for you to wash his bedding every few weeks. As to the fact that he has only one pair of pants, buy him a pair for his next birthday or for Christmas, whichever comes sooner.
This is Royal Stars Horoscopes by Madeline Aslan. A baby born today has a sun in Pisces and a moon in Cancer until 6:23 a.m. when the moon enters Leo. Happy birthday for Wednesday, February 24th, 2021. Self-sacrificing, open, and accepting, you give your all. This year, efficiency and clarity allow you to be extremely successful with a project of your own making. Do not listen to others' opinions. If single, love becomes the be-all, end-all of existence this year, and you're ready to commit. If attached, share your love from a position of strength rather than weakness. Your partner adores you. Scorpio runs very deep. Aries, March 21st to April 19th. Today brightens your personal life. Your sense of style and people skills are also excellent. network, nurture a promising new relationship. Your artistic talents are in top form. Practice playing an instrument or create a drawing. Tonight, speak your mind. Taurus, April 20th to May 20th. There can be some stress involving family members. A residential move or change to your workspace is possible. Differences are resolved through discussions or emails. Take sensible precautions and all will be well. Tonight, an elderly relative might need your assistance. Gemini, May 21st to June 20th. Expect some interesting conversations. New ideas are suggested, and business joins gracefully with pleasure. Your energy level is enhanced. Romantic urges are pronounced, and you will express your love. Tonight, natural magic will work quickly to intensify the relationship. Cancer, June 21st to July 22nd. Imaginative plans increase your income. A hunch, as well as new developments in your field, lead to worthwhile new opportunities. Be careful not to discard memorabilia and keepsakes impulsively. Tonight, tense family situations from the past are resolved. Leo, July 23rd to August 22nd. Today augurs a fresh start and brings a cycle of higher energy leading to much accomplishment. Frustrations will melt away, direct irritation into constructive venues, and the world will be at your feet. Focus on what you want. Go for close and intimate. Virgo, August 23rd to September 22nd. Consider consequences and options first. Quiet the mind through meditation. Psychic communication with wild creatures will be especially lucid. Use your creative talents to shine. Use your imagination. A child or new friend inspires you. Tonight, you might just want to luxuriate and take a nap. Libra, September 22nd to October 22nd. Today brings the gift of friendship. Get involved with groups. Cultivate those whom you would enjoy as friends. Politics and community issues can be a catalyst for association. Enjoy life and put plans in motion for future dreams. Tonight, take the night off. Scorpio, October 23rd to November 21st. Today highlights public recognition and your career. Be alert to changes in your field. Very keen competition is present. Dispel confusion by double-checking for precision and accuracy. Be diplomatic during discussions. Tonight, an uncharitable comment made would come back to haunt you. Sagittarius, November 22nd to December 21st. Your natural cleverness is enhanced. It's a perfect day to begin writing a book, assembling artistic creations, or selecting educational goals. Work incorporating music and art from faraway lands can elevate your spirit. Interactions with a child will be especially happy and comforting. Tonight, relax. Capricorn, December 22nd to January 19th. Financial obligations relating to others can be resolved. Sincerity is the best way to process and release old resentments. Get in tune with how you really feel and let others know. You overcome competition or other obstacles with aplomb. Tonight, a partner's perspective is grounded. Aquarius, January 20th to February 18th. Cooperation and tolerance are essential today. You'll be aware of the importance of upholding justice and maintaining balance. A deep awareness is present. Your intuition is wonderful. Heed those inner voices and you'll be guided towards success. Tonight, fun date night. Pisces, February 19th to March 20th. The quiet and cool hours will have a rejuvenating power.
a healthy challenge can be overcome. Adopt a live and let live attitude toward others. Make few demands and seek no favors. Negotiate to avoid conflict. Tonight, an online meeting opens new doors. Born today, storyteller Wilhelm Grimm, 1786, entrepreneur Steve Jobs, 1955, boxer Floyd Mayweather, 1977.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.